You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 24th of May 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, it seems over the weekend that one of the most prominent Black Lives Matter spokesmen has been shot in the head. Apparently, while at a party. And this is the one that's famous for saying, "The white man will not be our equal but our slave. History is changing, no justice, no peace." So she's famous for being anti-white, basically. If that had been said any other way around, if it had been nationalists saying the black man will not be our equal but our slave, I am sure there would be criminal charges against them. But it seems it's perfectly fine for Sasha Johnson from Black Lives Matter to say that. Well, apparently, as I say, she has been shot in the head. Prominent Black Lives Matter activist Sasha Johnson is critically ill after being shot in the head, her party says. The Taking the Initiative party said she was being treated in intensive care after being brutally attacked in the early hours of Sunday. The group said the attack, which happened in Peckham, South London, followed numerous death threats. And this is actually from the BBC. So the BBC are leading their article with what the party says. And imagine if this was talking about nationalists and instead of actually starting with what Hope Not Hate say, it started with what the nationalist group actually had to say. Of course, you're never going to see that. So we've been told here by the Taking the Initiative party that they suspect that this was down to these death threats that have been made towards her. So they're obviously implying that it's white people that have been making these threats. They claim that she was brutally attacked. The BBC lead with that. That's the first three sentences. And then we get what the police have to say, and the police say something quite different. Police have not confirmed her identity, but said at this stage there was no evidence the attack was targeted. So instead of leading with what the police actually say, they're going to lead with what the black activists have to say. Officers said the 27-year-old woman was taken to a South London hospital with life-threatening injuries and have appealed for witnesses. Police said at this stage there was no evidence to suggest she had received any credible threats against her. And what it seems like has happened is that she was at a party and somebody was shot at this party. And getting shot at parties is just something that seems to happen in multicultural London nowadays. They actually have a specific crime unit to deal with black gun crime. It's called Trident. And in actual fact, you're more at risk of being shot or stabbed in London as if you are a black man than you are being attacked by the police. But Black Lives Matter seem to have made it their cause to protest against police harming black lives. But in actual fact, they're far more at risk from other black people, which is what we see here. I think we're going to find out that the suspected attacker here is black. I suspect it was gang related, and she would have been doing much better service to her people if she had been protesting against black gun crime and all the black people that end up being shot by other blacks. Iman Aiton, a friend of Miss Johnson's, told the BBC doctors had carried out surgery on her fellow activist, which had gone well. and she was now with her parents. She said Miss Johnson had been at a party or gathering when she was injured, but she did not believe she was the intended victim. So further down the article, we see that witnesses are saying she was not the intended victim. So why does the BBC lead with this idea that she was brutally attacked following numerous death threats, which is what Black Lives Matter are trying to push? This is the narrative that Black Lives Matter are trying to push, and the BBC seem to be going along with that rather than what the witnesses say and what the police have to say. This witness continued, "As far as I am aware, this incident is more related to rival gangs as opposed to her activism." So she was probably shot in the crossfire. It was somebody else that they were probably trying to shoot. I mean, we're always hearing about black people being killed in the crossfire, particularly in places like Chicago and Baltimore. Stray bullets go through walls and take out toddlers. And when you actually see them firing these guns, they're sort of holding them sideways like they've seen in the movies. I don't think there are many places where you could actually practice firing a gun properly in Britain, so I guess that's just something you've got to expect, is stray bullets flying around in multicultural cities nowadays. Detectives from the Met's Specialist Crime Command have been investigating at the scene and the surrounding area and are pursuing a number of lines of inquiry. It is believed the shooting happened near a house where a party was taking place and a number of people may have been in the area, a Met police statement said. It's also quite shocking the number of times that this happens at a party as well. A party is supposed to be somewhere where you celebrate, yet when we get lots of black people together holding a party, quite often it ends up with multiple shootings. I can think of one that happened in Florida, I think it was, where about a dozen people ended up being shot at a party that was being held in one of these Airbnb houses. Miss Johnson, a graduate of Oxford Brookes University, has been a leading figure in the Black Lives Matter movement in the UK and is a member of the Taking the Initiative Party's Leadership Committee. In a statement on Instagram, the party said Miss Johnson was a mother of two and a powerful voice who had always been fighting for black people and against the injustices that surround the black community. Is that really fighting for black people, to say that white people should be black people's slaves, and to be saying no justice and no peace? They're not going to allow justice to happen. They're not going to allow the community to have any peace. If she's so against racism, surely it would make sense to go to a country where there wasn't any racism, where it was majority black. Surely you would think that would be the sensible thing to do for somebody that didn't like living in multicultural cities and multicultural areas where there is a chance of racism. Of course, white people don't like racism either, and white people would like to go to a country that is 100% white, but we don't have any. Just Miss Johnson, she's so lucky to actually have a continent full of 100% black countries, 100% the same sort of people that she is, but rather than being there, she would rather live in a multicultural country where there is just all this racism going on that she has to protest against. The party continued, "Let's all come together and pray for Sasha, pray for her recovery, and show our support to her family and loved ones." And there are quite a few people praying for Sasha on Twitter. Lawrence Fox is one of them. Black Lives Matter UK tweeted it was shocked by the shooting of a young mother and fearless political campaigner who was at the forefront of many BLM protests last summer. Well, you would imagine that by now they weren't really that shocked at a black person getting shot. I mean, it really does happen with quite a lot of regularity. I guess it is shocking to hear of people being shot, but I mean, this is a group that calls itself Black Lives Matter. Surely it looks into the number of black lives that are lost at the hands of shootings, and it's a lot more than the number of black lives that are lost at the hands of police, I can tell you that. It said that while she was not a part of their own organisation, she impressively founded a new black-led political party and was dedicated to resist anti-black racism. And again, her way of resisting anti-black racism was just to be anti-white. We're not allowed to have white-led political parties specifically for white people, but blacks are allowed to have black-led political parties that are specifically for black people. The BNP actually had a court case against them because they wanted to specifically be a party for white people, and they weren't allowed to have that, but apparently it's okay if you're black. Announcing that a vigil would be held for her on Monday afternoon at King's College Hospital, it added, "Any attempt to intimidate or silence her is an attack on all of us." So the BBC begin the article by pushing this false narrative that this is a result of death threats against her for her politics. And they end the article again by implying that, by saying any attempt to intimidate or silence her is an attack on all of us. We've been told this was not an attempt to intimidate her or silence her. This was gang related. She was in a dangerous area, in a dangerous situation where black lives very often get snuffed out. And unfortunately, she ended up getting shot. And it would be far more sensible for her to be campaigning against black gang violence than it was to be campaigning against police. But I guess that's not such a fashionable cause, is it, to be against black gun violence? Well, let's move on to a more light-hearted news story here. A vicar is set to replace badly eroded religious carvings at a Yorkshire church with scenes depicting BAME and feminist icons. We'll stop right there. What do feminist icons have to do with a Yorkshire church? What do black and minority ethnics have to do with a Yorkshire church? What do they have to do with Yorkshire history? What do they have to do with Christian history? Nothing at all. This is just an attempt to fit in with the prevailing pro-left-wing narrative. St Mary's Church, a centuries-old parish in Beverley East Riding of Yorkshire, has been given the green light to introduce figures including the Queen, Marie Curie, and nursing pioneer Mary Seacole in place of some of its ancient carvings. And again, what do they have to do with Christianity? Okay, the Queen is the head of the Church of England. You could say that that's okay to have the Queen there. Marie Curie, she was Polish. She discovered pasteurization. What does that have to do with Christianity? Nothing at all. Mary Seacole, she was partially black. There is some discussion about how black she actually was. She was mixed race. They call her a nursing pioneer. She wasn't a nursing pioneer. Florence Nightingale was a nursing pioneer. All Mary Seacole did was open up a business in the Crimea where she tended to injured servicemen. And Florence Nightingale was of the opinion that it was almost like a house of ill repute. She would allow them to get drunk, and she certainly didn't want her to have anything to do with her nurses. Florence Nightingale didn't. So she certainly wasn't up to the standard of being a nurse, basically. But they like to promote Mary Seacole just because they're trying to find somebody black in our history. But that has nothing to do with the church. We already have great female icons in the church. What about Mary the Virgin Mother? Are there not enough images of Mary? Are there not enough images of Mary Magdalene? What about some of the female saints? What about Mother Teresa? Why do we have to have feminist icons? Why can't we just have women in the church? Something to actually do with Christianity rather than something to do with left-wing progressivism. The 16th century carvings at the Grade 1 listed church, which dates back to 1120, have become so badly eroded over the years it is impossible to see what they are meant to depict. Well, surely they must have images, representations of what those carvings were, and I'm sure that they could fix them. I'm sure that they could renovate them and make them look good again. Why do they have to replace them and put the imagery of things which are against traditionalism, which are against the traditional church? Feminism is against the patriarchy, isn't it? Feminism is against the system that is outlined in the Bible. It's anti-Christian. Feminism is anti-Christian. black and minority ethnic. Well, that's just neutral, isn't it? But it's not pro-Christian, is it? It's got nothing to do with the church. Why replace perfectly good carvings, some of which go back almost 1,000 years? Why replace them with representations of things that have nothing to do with the church? Surely people would actually come to visit the church if they renovated these carvings and people knew that they were 1,000 years old. Surely that would be a much better idea than basically getting rid of them and replacing them with black and minority ethnics who have nothing to do with the church and nothing to do with Yorkshire. Now the go-ahead has been given by the Church of England's Consistory Court for some of the artefacts to be replaced with new carvings with a BAME and Achievements of Women theme. The plan, for which the vicar, Reverend Rebecca Lumley, and two of her church wardens sought approval, was given the go-ahead by Chancellor of the local diocese, Canon Peter Collier QC, in his role as a judge of the Consistory Court. And he should really have known better. I don't think we can really expect more from the Reverend Rebecca Lumley. She's a female and she has already decided that she's going to break the guidelines of the Bible and teach and preach and be a priestess in the church, which is explicitly forbidden in the New Testament, and it's explicitly forbidden in the Old Testament. So she's already decided that she knows better than God. She knows better than the disciples. She knows better than Jesus Christ. So, of course, it's up to her if she wants to replace these old icons in the church and put images of Mary Seacole up instead. But there's no excuse for the Canon Peter Collier not putting his foot down here, I think. He said, "I am entirely satisfied that the petitioners have made out the case for their proposal." And I wonder how many of the people that actually live in East Ridings of Yorkshire approve of this. How many of them want to see these 1,000-year-old carvings replaced with images of Mary Seacole and Marie Curie? In their application for consent, the Reverend Lumley, and I bet she doesn't look anything like Joanna Lumley, the Reverend Lumley and the church wardens said, "The contribution of women to humanity isn't always properly recognised in the telling of history, and throughout history, women's voices have been silenced." Well, the church says that women should be silent in church. That's what the Bible says. That's what the New Testament says. It says that women shouldn't teach. And that really, it goes back to what did women teach when they were given the chance? Well, she taught Adam to eat the forbidden fruit. And that was the traditional church teaching. You can find that in the Douay Rheims Bible, the original Catholic Bible. It gives a lot of the explanations for the teachings of the church in there, and that is their explanation as to why it says in the New Testament that women shouldn't teach. And it's not that we have women teaching here, but we actually have women that are now taking the role of men as priests. And as I pointed out, we already have women in history that we could be honouring. And the church already does it honour them. The church already does it honour Mary, the Mother of God. The Catholic Church in particular revere Mary, the Mother of Christ. The Reverend Lumley continues, "We take seriously the church's role in battling inequality and injustice. And so we hope that this project will help highlight the remarkable achievements of these women and provide hope and inspiration for future generations." How does Mary Seacole setting up effectively a pub or an inn in the Crimea and Marie Curie discovering pasteurisation, how does that fight inequality and injustice? What inequality was there? What injustice was there? I mean, surely the fact that Marie Curie was able to discover pasteurisation, that shows that the women were not being oppressed. They were not being told that they couldn't educate themselves. Far from it. Women had the time to educate themselves because they had everything paid for by their husbands. They didn't have to go out and work like they do today. They actually had the time to study and educate themselves. And if they wanted to pursue scientific endeavours, they were perfectly entitled to do that if they wished. But most of them didn't wish to do that. Most of them wished to follow what nature had provided for them. Most of them wished to produce children because they knew that producing children would give them contentment. I mean, that is the way that it is in nature. Women that follow science and devote their youthful years to studying in university are not going to be producing the children that they need to give them the contentment that they desire. And most of the time, these sorts of women, they get to the age of 40 and they still haven't had children. They've effectively, by educating themselves so much, they've limited the number of men that would be interested in them, and they end up getting quite bitter at the fact that they don't have grandchildren by that stage. I guess a lot of them nowadays are being encouraged to freeze their eggs, but even that has a lot of risks involved with it, and it costs a lot of money. The plan is for the replacement carvings to include images of the Queen, and as I say, that's acceptable. Queen is the head of the Church of England. Crimean War nursing pioneer Mary Seacole, who in 2004 was voted the greatest Black Briton. Again, what does that have to do with the church? It has absolutely nothing to do with the church, nothing to do with Christianity, and she wasn't really that black. I think she had one black grandparent or one non-white grandparent. They do try to make out that she was sub-Saharan African, but she wasn't. She was from the Caribbean, I believe. We actually spoke about her quite a bit in the Greatest Britons episode on Florence Nightingale, if anyone is interested in finding out more about the story of Mary Seacole and how they have used her to try and push Florence Nightingale out of the limelight, whereas Florence Nightingale was responsible for the whole of nursing that we have today. The whole profession of nursing did not exist until Florence Nightingale started it. And Mary Seacole's connection is just that she also went out to the Crimea. Florence Nightingale turned her down and said that she did not have what is needed to become a nurse. And Mary Seacole opened up an inn, a rest home, basically, in the Crimea. That was all that she did. And yet she's made out to be the greatest Black Briton. Well, what does that say? Well, it says there really aren't that many great Black Britons, are there, if just opening up a pub in the Crimea means that you're the greatest of them. Marie Curie is included. Again, Marie Curie has nothing to do with the church. Airship designer Hilda Leon. What does that have to do with the church? Nothing. Pioneering aviator Amy Johnson. What does that have to do with the church? Nothing. I think we might have actually covered Amy Johnson as well in our Greatest Britain series. I think that was one of the greatest Britons that was suggested by Max Musson. But again, what does that have to do with the church? What does being a pioneering aviator have to do with the church? Nothing. Astronaut Helen Sharman. Why was Helen Sharman an astronaut? Well, she was an astronaut because they had a diversity quota and they wanted to get women in space. And women's rights advocate Mary Wollstonecraft. So out of all of those, there's only one which actually has a connection to the church, and that is the Queen. And I bet they've already got representations of Mary, the mother of Jesus. They will already have a representation of her within the church. And what about the carvings that we are losing? Why is there no mention of what these carvings are that we are no longer going to see that are being replaced with these feminist icons? Giving his consent, Chancellor Collier said the erosion of the existing carvings was so bad it was impossible to tell what they were meant to be or whether there was any theme to them. Well, I am sure that there will have been pictures drawn of those carvings at some point in the last 1,000 years. There always is. When you go to these old churches, there's usually a little book that tells you all about the history of the church, and it will tell you all the history of all the carvings. And they can't say that the erosion of these carvings has only just happened. It will have been documented what they originally looked like. They just don't want to replace them. They have this trendy female vicar, and she wants to do the same as Sadiq Khan and replace the images of white people in the church and replace them with images of black and minority ethnics and feminists. That's all there is to it. He said each of the women whose names have been put forward have played a significant role in relation to the advancement of science or human knowledge. How does opening a pub in the Crimea work in relation to the advancements of science or human knowledge? It doesn't. She's just there because she's black. Adding that in the case of the Queen, the worldwide impact of her reign was beyond question. In my judgment, it is entirely appropriate to celebrate these lives for their human achievement, he said. Well, is there any tradition in the church of doing that? No. In churches, you have images of saints, you have images from the Bible. You don't have secular imagery in there. I mean, that is the whole point of the church, is it's supposed to be religious. It's supposed to be religious imagery. It's not supposed to be secular in there. The whole point of it is so that you have a holy space, you have a sacred space, and you have religious images to augment that sacred space. Some of the carvings currently being restored at the church, so they can actually restore them then. There's no need for them to actually get rid of them. As it says here, some of them are being restored. And the church itself is described as one of the most beautiful parish churches in England. Some of these carvings that are being restored were installed in 1520 when the main part of the church was being rebuilt. So they've got a really beautiful church here, and they're going to desecrate it with feminist icons and black and minority ethnics with nothing to do with the church. I mean, it's scandalous what they're doing. In 2020, as part of the restoration of the church, 14 new carvings of characters from the Chronicles of Narnia by C.S. Lewis were made and installed at St. Mary's after being blessed by the Bishop of Hull. Why don't we put Mickey Mouse in there, eh? And Donald Duck. I mean, this is just mocking the church, isn't it? C.S. Lewis was a Christian. He was a outspoken Christian. But the Chronicles of Narnia are fantasy. They've got nothing to do with the church. When you look at some of these old carvings, there are Odinic carvings, there are carvings of the Green Man, we have gargoyles, but all of those things actually have a spiritual connection, though, and they're actually a part of our history. They're part of our religious history. The Chronicles of Narnia are not a part of our religious history. The announcement comes just days after the Church of England published new guidance following the Black Lives Matter movement, which urges churches and cathedrals to consider the history of their buildings and the physical artifacts and how it could impact their congregation's worship. Well, I should imagine having Aslan and the Chronicles of Narnia there, that is going to be impacting the congregation's worship far more than having an image of Mary there or St. Joseph or Moses or King David or any of the other characters that they have in these churches. And why should the Black Lives Matter movement have anything at all to do with the church? It's just the church trying to jump on the latest fashionable, trendy movement. And in doing so, they lose all their traditional supporters. The membership of the church is dwindling, and they're not going to get churchgoers back into the churches by promoting feminism in them, are they? For some churches, this means removing artifacts with links to slavery and colonialism. There are no churches with links to slavery. There are churches that had benefactors that worked in trade, but there are no direct links to slavery. I mean, if they have their way, they will destroy everything that was created during the time of expansion when we were trading all around the world, and when Africa was trading slaves. It was Africa that was actually trading the slaves, not Britain. They didn't come from Britain. It was Africans selling other Africans as slaves. If it wasn't for that, there wouldn't have been any slavery. And Africa benefited from it just as much as Britain benefited from it, and America. Churches that have already taken action include St. Margaret's Church in Rottingdean, Sussex, which has removed two deeply offensive grave headstones which contained racial slurs. And I think that may have been gravestones for somebody's pet at the time. because people did used to call their pets these affectionate names that we had for these other races. It's only today that they're looked upon as racial slurs. They were looked upon as an affectionate name. If you're going to call your pet a name like that, it's not because you think it's a racial slur, is it? It's because you think it's an affectionate name for your pet. You don't call your pet a name that you don't like, do you? St. Peter's Church in Dorchester has also covered up a plaque commemorating a plantation owner. And what is a plantation owner? Well, it was somebody that provided employment for the indigenous. In the past, those plantations were originally set up by white indentured servants who were little better than slaves. Well, how do they think these slaves would have been providing for themselves if the plantation owners hadn't been providing work for them? They wouldn't have been able to provide for themselves. That's why they developed that system in Africa. Dedications to slave trader Edward Colston were removed from Bristol Cathedral last year. And as we pointed out before, Edward Colston made his money just in selling cotton and other things. He had nothing to do with the slave trade when he had made his money. And then after he had actually made his money and he had bequeathed it, then he worked for a company, and a part of what this company did was engage in the slave trade. But again, that is what everybody was doing. It's not like the Africans weren't involved in this. Everybody was involved in it. In June 2020, the Church of England established an anti-racism task force, which carried out a review of the action it had taken to address its own role in the slave trade. And what was the Church of England's role in it? Well, the Church of England's role in it was to put a stop to it. It was mainly Church of England vicars, preachers, and missionaries that actually put a stop to it. The Church of England should be patting itself on the back for doing away with the slave trade, not punishing itself and indulging in all this guilt and self-pity. Speaking on the issue last year, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, said that justice is crucial to forgiveness, as he stressed a need to learn from the past so that it is not repeated in the future. His comments came as monuments of controversial figures came under the microscope amidst the wave of protests and growing tensions about Britain's colonial past, sparked by global outcry following the death of George Floyd in the US. And as we discovered when we looked at David Livingstone in our Greatest Britain series, if it wasn't for Britain's colonial past, we would still have slavery. It was only because Britain set up colonies in Africa and built roads between these colonies that the Africans were able to stop selling one another as slaves and take up other trades. And that was the whole point of setting up these colonies. It was to put a stop to the slave trade. If the Africans had been left to themselves, they would still be engaging in it. Floyd was killed when white police officer Derek Chauvin pressed his knee into his neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. Despite his desperate pleas that he can't breathe, he passed out and later died in Minneapolis on May the 25th. And what a lot of people forget is that he was actually saying he can't breathe before he even got down on the road and before Derek Chauvin held him in that hole. He was already suffering from a drug overdose before that actually happened. But Derek Chauvin was found guilty of it, and I do think that the jury may have been lent on somewhat, but he was found guilty of it. So I can't say anything other than I personally disagree with that judgment, but he was found guilty. Floyd's death is seen as a symbol of systemic police brutality against African Americans, sparking outrage and largely peaceful protests, first across the US before quickly spreading worldwide. Largely peaceful protests that caused billions of dollars worth of damage. And again, just harkening back to the first news story today, all these protests against systemic police brutality, and it was it systemic police brutality that got Sasha Johnson shot in the head? No, it wasn't. It was black gangs that got Sasha Johnson shot in the head. Well, hopefully she will get better, and hopefully Black Lives Matter will realise that it's actually their own people that are killing them off, not the police, but I won't be holding my breath for that to happen. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless, and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.